2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah help.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Looking for the latest on the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, and Aggies?
Yeah,
we've got you covered. This is Hans Olsen and Scotty G on 97.5, the Sports Zone.
All right, final hour of the show. Hans and Scotty. Hans out this week, but hey, we're halfway through it, folks. We're almost there. Just got a pesky Thursday and Friday left, and then we're done. The big man will be back. He'll have all kinds of stories. Hopefully he didn't get attacked by a stingray again. But I'm sure there's going to be some story about him getting into some level of trouble, because you can just count on it.
Always is.
Always is. Arm wrestling dudes, getting into trouble with the locals, all kinds of stuff. I'm not even making stuff up.
You know what? He cuts loose like a couple times a year.
Yes.
And when he cuts loose, he cuts loose.
Yeah. When he gets sideways, decisions. Watch out. All right, joining us now, BYU insider for KSLSports.com, really good dude, and breaks down BYU better than anybody else. It's Mitch Harper joining us. Mitch, how are you?
Doing great, Scotty. Happy to be on with you. I heard a bit of your interview with Michelle Bodkin, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, Scotty. This day, signing day, used to be incredible, and it's just a shell of its old self, and hopefully we get back to a day with this, you know, 12-team college football playoff era coming up, that the signing day just maybe has its own standalone day and it actually means something again. But nonetheless, I'm always happy to be on with you because there's still a lot to unpack with BYU.
Well, there is. And, you know, normally I ask, I asked Blake Anderson this, I asked Michelle this, and I'll ask you because I know the answer to this. There's usually not a lot of surprises, but BYU went down to the wire on a running back that I know they're really fired up about.
They are fired up about him. L.J. Martin, you know, 6'2", 205-pound running back from El Paso, Texas. He had offers from Stanford, Texas Tech, Baylor, Kansas State, kind of the heart of the Big 12. And he was a Stanford commit, and he flips to BYU. BYU kind of got in the picture around December 1st, and it was kind of a microwave recruitment where it was, you know, a really fast-paced deal. And he was impressed with the academic side. He's a smart kid and really kind of values things maybe beyond football. And from that side of things, I mean, he doesn't know much about BYU, but he liked what they had to offer on the academic side, paired with the opportunity of being in the Big 12 and going back to the state of Texas. And there was a lot to like there. And he picks BYU, so it's a big get. And I think he joins a running back position group that they've got Aiden Robbins from UNLV, who you probably saw firsthand at the Mountain West Conference. He was really good last year. He had off-season wrist surgery, Aiden Robbins, so that's kind of something to monitor. But they also bring back Falau Rapati, Hinkley Rapati, and Miles Davis. So it's a pretty good running back position group, and I think L.J. Martin adds to that. And he might be a guy that could be in the two deep in year one. He's pretty impactful. Even Kalani Sitake today drew comparisons to Tyler Allgeier. Kalani does not do that. He does not draw comparisons to anyone, but when he does, these guys tend to be pretty good. So I thought that was pretty noteworthy today.
Anything else that surprised you today, or was everything else pretty much what you expected?
everything was pretty much as expected. I mean, there was a little bit of maybe a mild surprise in Motikai Monga, 6'3" defensive lineman from Tippview High. He last week put out a top four that didn't include BYU, but it seemed like it was kind of one of those silent commit deals where he signed back in December and BYU had it in snow, but kind of maybe enhanced the drama a little bit. And he joins BYU. He's more of a developmental guy long term down the road. But I think, you know, BYU's roster is an okay place. I still think that right now it's a roster that's probably definitely in the back half of the Big 12. I'd say probably in the bottom you know, quarter of the league. I think there's still a long way to go. And I thought it was kind of refreshing to hear from Jay Hill, the defensive coordinator for BYU, that he's like, we're nowhere near ready for the Big 12 as far as personnel. And I think this is going to be a team that's pretty active potentially in the May 1st to May 15th transfer portal window, where they might, you know, have to push out some guys for after spring ball and try to add some additional bodies to really bolster the depth. Because I think that's one of the concerns that I look at with this team in 2023, knowing what the schedule is now. I still have those questions about how much depth BYU truly has. And I think it's maybe not as deep as they've had in recent years.
Is there spots available? Have they kind of carved out a few spots that are available, or will they need to push back some guys if, you know, some stellar opportunities pop up in the portal?
It would have to be some pushing out after spring ball. You know, we did find out today that spring ball will start March 6th and it will conclude April 15th, which is a little bit later than BYU typically does. They're kind of shorten up the weeks and not as many practices in a single week, so they'll stretch it out farther. And after April 15th, they'll have exit interviews. And, you know, wouldn't be surprised if we see some guys, you know, maybe let them know really where they stand in the program, and they might have to turn to the transfer portal. So because BYU, they juggle so many names when it comes to return missionaries with gray shirts, with these transfer portal, and then you got the returning letterman. There's so many names that it goes well beyond the 123 that you can carry on a fall roster. And so they'll have some attrition, and Klum even noted that today. But I think that, you know, I still think along the defensive line and offensive line are going to be areas where they have to bolster, and maybe a wide receiver as well too, because they're starting wide receivers, projected starters with Chase Roberts, Keanu Hill, and Cody Epps. They'll be good. But after that, I think there's a pretty big drop. And I think they would probably be well served to try to add a transfer portal wide receiver coming up in the spring session.
Let's, you know, and it's interesting because I think when some kids hit the transfer portal, there are fans out there like, oh my gosh, we lost another one and lost another one, not knowing that sometimes there's conversations with coaches, as you mentioned. They'll bring a kid in and say, hey, look, you know what? We offered you a scholarship and we'll honor that scholarship, but you'll never play it down for us and you'll always be on scout team. If you want to leave and go get playing time, we can find a spot for you. Go hit the portal and we'll make some phone calls and we'll see what we can find to get you the playing time you deserve. So it's not always a kid just leaving because he wants to leave. Sometimes he kind of gets gently pushed through the door a bit. Has there been anybody that has left BYU in the transfer portal that really surprised the coaching staff, or really, you know, it was like, okay, that one hurts. That's a rough one.
Gabe Judy Lally, the cornerback who ended up at Tennessee, he would have been a starter for BYU. I think that was a big loss. Now, getting Eddie Heckard from Weber State was a massive addition for BYU. Jay Hill, you know, Heckard, you know, declared for the NFL and was set to pursue the NFL draft, but he decides to enroll at BYU, and that was a huge coup. But, you know, losing Gabe Judy Lally, a guy that started in the SEC at Vanderbilt and started pretty much all of last year at BYU, that was a surprise. And, you know, Heckard and Judy Lally could have been a nice tandem for BYU at cornerback. So that one was surprising. I think Clark Barrington was a little bit of a surprise in the fact that that he went to another college. I think the thought was this was his last year at BYU. He was moving on to the NFL. The fact that he went to Baylor, that was a little bit surprising. And I think he's been pretty candid that, you know, he regressed. He didn't put out his best film, and maybe there wasn't as much alignment of the thoughts how he's coached up with the offensive line. So he goes back to Jeff Grimes, the guy that he flourished under. It's a shame that BYU doesn't get Baylor, because there would have been so many great storylines with that one. But those are probably the other only ones. Everyone else was pretty explanatory, where it was either a playing time situation or a young guy maybe not enjoying his time at Provo, whatever it may be. Those were guys that that moved on.
Mitch Harper, BYU insider for KSLSports.com, joining us. All right, so let's get to the schedule announced yesterday. BYU, it's official. I mean, we all knew it was coming, but actually seeing it on paper and seeing dates attached to it, I know that was a special moment for a lot of BYU fans out there.
It really was, and cause I do think that it was, I joked on Cougar Tracks how they've sat through the old, Big 12 teleconferences where they're waiting on the words of Dave Boren and Bob Bowlesby to announce something, hoping that they have any sort of mention of BYU, and BYU's kind of had a whirlwind when it comes to conference realignment over the decades, I mean, even earlier before 2010 and 2011. So to actually see BYU in the Big 12 and have it be 1 year with Texas and Oklahoma and get both those teams, I think that was it looks surreal for BYU, and I think that it honestly validates and makes independence worth it, because really independence, when you look back on it, and Kelly Papinga I think said it best today at signing day presser, sugarcoat it all you want, but it was what it was, and there was a lot of limitations that came with independence. This is a higher standard that BYU's ever experienced, and I'm just fascinated to see how BYU can respond to a schedule where they've never faced a schedule where you can draw up, 7-8 straight losses for BYU. They've just never lived in that world. They've never operated in that space. They've always had schedules where you have baked in 6 wins guaranteed. Yeah. And, if you can muster up a few bounces go your way in 2 or 3 of them, you could have a special year. They've just never had a schedule like this where you might be the underdog in 7 or 8 games, and that's just new territory for BYU. So I'm really curious to see how they respond to it and how they can navigate this and what type of outcome they can put together.
Well, just in the spirit of transparency, I mean, we keep an eye, and I know you and Nate keep an eye on web activity and things like that, but from our standpoint, from podcasts related to BYU and online listening and things like that, we would see obviously a real big spike in September and October, and then November rolls around and, Idaho State's coming to town, and and most of the games are on the road, and you just see, excitement kind of dwindle a little bit in November. Now you get a crescendo with 2 really high profile home games in November. I don't know what the record's going to be, at that point, but the fact is, BYU now for the first time in 11 years is going to be playing meaningful November football games. And that is just a huge boon for the excitement of the program.
No question. And I think that, an 8-4 season, if that happened, I don't think it would this year, but if it did, that is a success. It's a resounding success. And then you carry that over into the following year against similar opponents and try to build on that momentum. Whereas you struggle to define successes with 7-9 win seasons in the independence. You looked at the norms in college football and said, that's above average. You're playing better than most, but it just felt like it was not impactful on the national scene of college football. And I think that, being in the Big 12, you kind of get lumped into the national conversation by, national writers, and the national narrative gets so much focus onto the Power 5. We'll see how it shifts, if it becomes just more about the Big 2 with the Big 10 and SEC. But the Big 12 is going to be a league that creates a lot of intrigue and headlines, and BYU will, like you said, it'll be meaningful football to the bitter end, and it'll have a carryover. Because even if, it's a losing season, if you, developed a bunch of years where there's animosity with some certain Big 12 team, that can just be something that adds juice to the end of a schedule. I mean, that's been sorely lacking since BYU left the Mountain West Conference, because that was always the crown jewel. Even if there was nothing on the line against Utah, there was just that heat, that intensity that came with that rivalry game. And I'm not saying that, there's going to be something that emerges in the Big 12 that levels equals Utah, but that could be. You never know, or TCU or whoever, Baylor, someone could emerge as the rival, and that could be something that you build up excitement regardless of how your season plays out. So it's a huge deal for BYU, and I just don't think that anyone honestly ever envisioned it happening. And I think that the timing worked out masterfully for BYU, because if Texas and Oklahoma are not the first ones to bolt as the big domino, if it's UCLA and USC first, I think we're talking about a completely different landscape, and BYU's maybe left on the outside looking in. It all worked out perfectly for BYU, and they've got a great spot in the Big 12 that looks to have a stable future going forward with Brett Yormark as the commissioner.
I am all here for the BYU-Oklahoma State end-of-season rivalry. Let's just, Kalani Sitake versus, why am I spacing the name of their head coach? I'm a man. I'm 40. Mike Gundy, yeah. Look, let's get the rivalry juices flowing there between those two. But, you know, it's the other thing, too, and I don't know if it just was a fluke of the schedule or if it was, the power of BYU or whatever the case is. The fact is they're the only newcomer that gets both Oklahoma and Texas on their schedule. And I actually think Oklahoma and Texas, this is going to be their last year. And if that's the case, that's a really nice feather in your cap to be able to play those two, especially with OU coming to your place in November. That's not a bad thing to look at all.
It's a big deal. And I think that, you know, when the reports are out there, you know, about Texas and Oklahoma looking down on the newcomers, I don't believe that really applies to BYU. I mean, there's been a good working relationship. BYU's AD, Tom Holmoe, is really close with Joe Castiglione, the Oklahoma AD. Holmoe views him kind of like a mentor in this profession. They work closely on the NCAA selection committee. Chris Del Conte at Texas, Holmoe's pretty close with him from their time in the Mountain West when he was at TCU. So I think there was like a good working relationship. The real hang-up, I believe, was Texas not wanting to go to UCF, because UCF was the one team in the newcomers that doesn't get to host either Texas or Oklahoma. And there had to have been some sort of upset. I mean, that could have been potentially one of the delays. Who knows? But I think if you're going to play one of those newcomers, I think Texas and Oklahoma are like, okay, we'll play BYU. BYU's been a program that's played really the who's who of brands in college football in Provo. And, you know, I think it's credit to BYU fans. There was a lot of, who knows, social media and message boards aren't a real gauge of society, but, the Oklahoma fans seem to be pretty excited at the idea of going to Provo and playing in that game. That's going to be one of the hottest tickets I think I've probably ever seen for a BYU football home game in probably my lifetime. So that's going to be quite the spectacle to see the Sooners. And you think about the history when Barry Switzer back in the day is looking down on BYU in the 80s and 1984. I mean, that program, that logo is in Provo. That's a pretty big deal for BYU. And, yeah, to get them, both of them, in this swan song potentially for those programs, that's a big deal for BYU. And it really can be, great data for these newcomers in the new Big 12 going forward when it comes to media rights. And you can really sell the future of this new iteration of the Big 12 if a BYU can spring an upset against Oklahoma and say, hey, I know Oklahoma's brand is elite, but, sometimes we get caught up in the moment in college football, and that could be something tangible that you can build momentum off of for this new Big 12. I thought the schedule makers in the Big 12 did a really excellent job finding ways to create storylines each and every week and maybe have a game emerge that kind of captures a national audience in the sport. And I thought they did a pretty good job with piecing together the schedule.
Well, and also, too, you're looking at a situation where, they could have been really rough on BYU on road games, and you only have one really nasty road game in terms of mileage, and that's West Virginia.
Yeah, I thought the schedule kind of played out well. I mean, you can draw up a scenario where BYU maybe starts out 5-0. I don't think that happens. I would probably err on the side of maybe 3-2, but you could take down Arkansas in that non-conference game. Arkansas is not a juggernaut. I mean, they looked amazing against BYU last year, but Kansas, who knows what they'll be. I mean, they got Jalen Daniels at quarterback coming back. He's one of the most dynamic signal callers in college football. It's going to be a real, thorn in the Big 12. But the Cincinnati, I think they've taken a huge step back with Scott Satterfield as the head coach instead of Luke Fickell. You could see BYU starting out hot, and then who knows where the narrative shifts and the confidence and the chemistry, or it could be 2-3 and BYU's slogging along, and the realities of Big 12 football really kick in because, but this schedule played out pretty well. And to get Oklahoma at home and to get, you know, get a chance to maybe rekindle something with TCU will be kind of fun too. I don't know if those fans at TCU really think anything of BYU anymore. I don't know. But I know back in the day with the Mountain West, those were some electric games that were must see in the national college football landscape. And maybe if you can rekindle some of that rivalry from that, that'd be kind of fun too.
Before I let you go, you know, we talk about the football team and a lot of good and exciting things going on there. But what's going on with the hoops team? Why the struggles? And look, I mean, there's been some head scratching losses and then just some gut punching losses to Gonzaga and St. Mary's.
BYU basketball it's been shocking to see that they have no tempo and they can't knock down the three. You know, coming into the year, Mark Pope wanted to be one of the fastest teams in college basketball. They're anything but. So that's been a complete surprise that they haven't been able to really install that up-tempo style of play that Pope wants, because that's what they want to be in the Big 12. They don't want to be the slow-down, methodical St. Mary's team that they kind of are right now, and St. Mary's execution's just off the charts. They're nowhere like them, but tempo-wise, they are. And that's got to change going forward. I always looked at this year as maybe a team that gets into the NIT, so I'm not completely, worried about the long-term prospects of BYU. I think this offseason is going to be fascinating to see what Pope can do with an NIL collective, because last year they lost out on guys like Antoine Davis, who's at Detroit Mercy. He's pouring in, 25 a game. He's one of the top scorers in college basketball history. He's chasing Pete Maravich down. They almost got him, and it really came down to a lack of a true collective maybe kind of sealing the deal. And basketball, I just feel like if you can get one star like that, that changes everything. And you're going to probably need more than one to go through the meat grinder that is the Big 12, where everyone's a top 40 team every night. But if you can get one in that portal next year, we've seen Pope has had the ability to get BYU in the conversation. He nearly got Mac McClung, who's been a guy that's bounced around the NBA, been a two-way contract guy in his pro career. He got Matt Harms. Like, he's shown an ability to get BYU big time, or get them in the conversation, or get visits with big time portal guys. That's going to be really the true story of what this can be, because I think this year they just wanted to identify some pieces that they can build with. I think they've done that with Spencer Johnson, Jackson Robinson. Dallin Hall's got a bright future at guard, but can they land the big time experienced veteran portal stars? That's going to be the challenge. Pope told me that that he did not want to sign anyone in the November signing period because they couldn't afford to get any younger than they already are. So it's going to be all hands on getting that portal, getting the veteran guys in April. And if they can land someone, maybe they can surprise some folks in the Big 12 a little bit. But, man, that league, BYU basketball is staring down a road of where it's going to take a while to really – maybe dream up, where they're even getting entertaining, maybe 18-win seasons. This can take a lot of time.
Mitch, always a pleasure to catch up with you. Thanks for joining us, and let's do it again here soon, okay?
No problem. You bet, Scotty. Take care, man.
Mitch Harper, one of the best out there. You can read his stuff at KSLSports.com. Follow him on Twitter, BYU Insider. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Alyssa Peely joins us next.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery
from CBS Sports. He covers college football. Shehan Jeharaja joining us on the program.
The nice thing about the Big 12 right now for anybody is that there is not a dominant team, especially when Texas and Oklahoma leave. There is no obvious Goliath to get over the hump. So I do think that makes the path a little bit easier. When you talk about competing year in and year out for the conference, I do think that it often takes about 3 to 5 years before you really find your rhythm. Not just because you need to sort of build things up from a recruiting and talent perspective, although that's a big part of it, but also because I think that it takes a minute for a school to really build their identity within a conference. And BYU's in an interesting position because they've been an independent for so long and created a version of themselves that can do a little bit of everything.
It's Unrivaled. Afternoons from 3 to 6. Presented by G2G Bars. Perfect for anyone who needs a quick, tasty, and nutritious boost. On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
I'm Dave Cauley,
investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Number one.
Miss any part of the show? Every moment of every show is available in podcast form by searching Hanson Scotty on your favorite podcasting platform or online at kslsports.com. This is Hans Olsen and Scotty G on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Hey, if you haven't been paying attention to this team, you should. 18-2, top 10 nationally ranked, coming off a really fun, impressive victory over UCLA at the Huntsman Center. University of Utah women's basketball team has a road trip coming up. They'll be at Oregon State, and then Oregon coming up again this Friday and Sunday. And Alyssa Peely, kind enough to join us after a really emotional come-from-behind victory against UCLA. Alyssa, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us. All right, so let's talk a little bit about that UCLA game. I know a bunch of people have already bugged you about it, but you hit the big three, you hit the layup as well. Talk about trying to stay cool and calm during, you know, especially on that three where everything seems to be hurried coming off the turnover. How do you stay calm and collected during those kind of situations?
I think it's just the type of person and player I am. And like in those situations, nothing changes. I think good things come out of just being cool, calm, and collected and just going out there and letting the game come to me. I think everything just worked out in my favor. And, like if I'm rushed or stressed, making decisions under stress, then, you know, nothing comes good out of that. So I try to stay as cool as I can out there.
You've won games hitting a big three. You've won games, you know, obviously with that layup. You've won games from the free throw line as well. What's the most stressful to do?
Well, I think the free throws are
that's what I would say.
Nerve-wracking, just because, you know, nobody's guarding you. Everybody's watching, and you know the game's on the line. But honestly, in that moment, I didn't really think of it that way. I kind of just knew I could win the game there, and I just went out there and did it.
Does that come from just sheer repetition? You know, hours and hours of shooting free throws in the gym all by yourself?
Yes, I was definitely confident just because I've been there before, and you know I do it every day, so it was just another two free throws I just had to make.
So let's back up a little bit. According to a few things I've read, you really captured a love of sports playing football, right?
Yeah, that was my first love.
Is that because the brothers were doing it, or where did that love for football come from?
Yeah, my older brother played football, and then my dad was the coach for a little while. So just being around it a lot, I think I just kind of grew to enjoy it. And once I got to third grade, I think I told my dad I wanted to play, and he let me. And yeah, I mean, it was just fun for me, especially being coached by my dad and playing with my brother. So
when you go to your dad and say, I want to play football, that's not, you know, a heavily, female dominated sport. So what was his thoughts when his daughter comes up and says, Dad, I want to line up and knock some heads?
I think he was fired up about it just because, it just kind of showed my toughness at an early age and just like how much of a competitor I was. So, I think he was happy about that.
Did you, the physicality of playing football, is that translated in your ability to play basketball?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's helped me just kind of be the strong player that I am and just kind of help me with body control a little bit and just playing football for that long, I think it helped with my strength a lot.
You had had some individual success at USC. That's you grew up in Alaska, correct? And then went to USC. When you hit the transfer portal, what were you looking for, and what did the Utes offer that really made you say, "This is where I want to finish my college career"?
The first thing, or the biggest thing for me, was just being somewhere where I'd be happy, not only on the court but off of it, and just somewhere where I knew I could thrive and just had a good support system, people who could support me in the ways I needed to. And, you know, Utah had all of that. And on top of that, just a great team coming back, a great culture. And it was just something I really wanted to be a part of.
When you come in and you're new to the team, but you're also leading the team in scoring, that's got to be an interesting transition. And you have to have teammates that really embrace you and your ability. It seems like that's gone off fairly seamlessly there at Utah.
Yep. You know, I came in with the attitude of just having kind of a fresh start and, you know, just working on things individually to help the team in the best way I could. And I think I just came in and did that. This team and the coaches really made it really easy for me to fit in and just pretty much thrive right when I got here. So my teammates are super supportive of me and my coaches as well. And, you know, I just couldn't ask for anything more.
Alyssa Peely from the Utah women's basketball team joining us, 18-2 on the season, and looking to continue this hot streak in Pac-12 play. Oregon State and Oregon coming up this weekend. But Alyssa, when you start settling in with this team, when did you get the sense? I mean, it sounds like you knew they were going to be pretty good, but when did you get the sense that you guys had the potential to be pretty special?
Honestly, when we started summer workouts and, you know, I kind of just got a feel for the team, playing with the rest of the girls, I just, right then and there, I just felt like we have all the potential in the world and sky's the limit for this team.
Knowing how the Pac-12 is and playing Pac-12 games already, did that help kind of settle you a little bit? Because there really wasn't anything too overly surprising because you knew this conference inside and out.
Yeah. I mean, this conference is really tough. You know, every team is just really good, has a bunch of great players, and are coached by the best coaches. And I think our having such a great preseason, coming into conference, I mean, we just kind of did well right away. And so I think that was just kind of a statement made, and for not only for others, but for ourselves, and just seeing how well we fit in, like with competition in the Pac-12. And I think that just kind of boosted our confidence that much more, just to know that, you know, we're kind of at the top in the Pac-12 amongst a lot of great teams.
How weird was it a couple of weeks ago when you played, actually last week, when you played USC?
It was interesting, but you know, I kind of looked at it as any other game, you know, just going into there to win and do as best I can. So it was cool seeing some familiar faces and, you know, playing against some of my old teammates. Yeah, that was really fun.
I've heard nothing but incredible things about Lynn Roberts. What is she like as a coach, and what makes her such a great head coach that has allowed this team to have success?
Yeah, I've said this a lot, but I think just the balance she has for her relationships with players, like on the court and off the court. She knows everybody very well and personally, I think. And she cares about us. And, you know, she's like our mom away from home. So, you know, she's just been great. And she really values the relationship part of knowing her players and, you know, kind of just giving us what we need to succeed. And I think she's just done such a great job with that for each and every one of us. And yeah, that's a huge reason, on top of she's a very smart coach and she knows the game really well. Just a big reason why we're so successful with her.
So you're coming down the home stretch, final third of the season. You got the road trip coming up, the Oregon road swing coming up this weekend. But what do you guys need to do to make sure that you continue this hot streak going into the Pac-12 tournament?
I think we just need to stay sharp, and you know, it's kind of deep into the season, so just staying together and showing our mental toughness. I think that will help us a lot moving forward.
Where does that toughness come from? Is that something you were born with? Is it not just the physical toughness, which we talked about with football, but the mental toughness? Does that come from mom and dad, or where did you develop that?
Oh, yeah. I was raised a lot differently than a lot of kids that I was around, and, things were pretty strict, and my dad didn't play around, so... that mental toughness piece was definitely from my parents and just the way they brought us up. And especially like playing sports a lot when I was younger, that had a play in it too. And I think just coming from a family who just really cares about us succeeding. Like my dad, he pushed us very hard, and, I would not be here today without him. And, everything is done. I may not have liked it at the time, but, I'm very grateful for how he raised us and just everything he's done for me.
I was going to say that there's a lot of kids out there that they're like, my dad is the worst. He's so tough on me. This stinks. But and this is hopefully you talking to my kids who say that about me. In the long run, that's good for you, right?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Looking back, I wouldn't have had it any other way.
I love it. Alyssa, hey, keep it rolling. Congratulations. This is a fun conversation. We look forward to seeing all the successes from you and the team going down the line.
Thank you.
You got it. Alyssa Peely. Fun conversation. Hey, averaging 21 points a game in Pac-12 play, 20 on the season. Utes are 18-2, top 10 nationally ranked, and cruising right now. Fun conversation for sure. And Lloyd's over there like, I got to be tougher on my kids.
Oh, I love when I hear that because I feel like that's just, I feel like it's dead.
I know, right?
But I hear that, I'm like, okay, I can do this. Did you see my tweet this morning?
I did not.
Had my 8-year-old woke me up at 5:30 in the morning. Hey, can you scratch my back?
What?
Yes. That happened at 5:30 this morning. And maybe if I was a little stricter, that wouldn't happen. He wouldn't get out of his bed.
Well, at least he's not trying to sleep till like 1 in the afternoon.
No, I don't have that issue.
I do have
really early.
My youngest keeps coming up and he's like, I'm so sick. I'm like, you were sick yesterday. He's like, I can't go to school. I'm like, no,
but
you
I'm
said
really,
that
no,
too.
No, but I'm really sick this time.
No, now I'm really sick. I'm like, okay, well, walk around a little bit. Go outside, get some fresh air in your lungs. You'll be fine. And then he goes to school, comes home, and he's just fine. I'm like, oh, so you're okay. It's like, yeah, I'm okay now. And then the next morning, I don't think I can go. I'm so sick.
I don't know what. I mean, maybe I'm doing something wrong. But I'll tell you, he also, my oldest, got, I don't know, banged up at recess or something like that. Had to call mama and be like, I'm hurt. I'm like, oh, what are we doing here? Come on.
Yeah.
Rub some dirt on it.
Yeah.
Get it back out there. Stretch it out a little bit.
Yeah. I had a.
you're not.
I had a very similar situation.
And he's always embarrassed, by the way. He doesn't want to tell me. He's like,
yeah. Well, I had a very similar situation where my wife was working and I was on my way to the studio. This was a couple of weeks ago, and I get a call from the school. I'm like, oh no. And anyway, what he described is his element was very. He could get through it. He was fine. Like, look, you're throwing up in class. All right, fine. I'll figure something out. I'll come get you and we'll get you home. But this was not. And so he's like, well, what should I do? I'm like, you march your butt back to class and get back after it. He's like, oh, you're the worst. I'm like, no. Look,
no, you get
back
all
right.
to class.
Yeah.
Like, we are single-handedly in my household keeping Band-Aid, the Band-Aid company, in business. Yeah. I can't even keep them stocked.
Why is that? That makes me so upset when somebody wants a Band-Aid and there's no broken skin.
No,
like, no,
I know.
you don't get a Band-Aid.
Need a Band-Aid.
You earn a Band-Aid. Oh, man, this is such get off my lawn radio right now.
I know. It really boiled over this morning when, hey, and he shakes my hand because I'm sleeping.
Yeah.
And he's like, can you scratch? I'm like, oh, what happened? Are you okay? You feeling okay? He goes, can you scratch my back? I'm like, what? No, I can't scratch your back. What are you doing? Go to bed.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
Failing. I'm failing being a parent.
Look, I'm with you. I think about it all the time. I think about it all the time. Like, I had the scary dad. Look, I love my dad. My dad is my hero. He is everything that I aspire to be. And as every year goes on in my life, I wish I was more like him. At 18, I didn't think that. And 16, I definitely didn't think that. But now at my age, I'm like, I have fallen so short. And you know what? My dad was the scary dad in the neighborhood. Like, you'd have, you know, you'd go over to a friend's house and he'd have the cool, they'd have the cool dad, right? That had all the cool toys and he'd play video games with you. And you're like, oh man, I wish my dad was like that. And then people would come to my house. They're like, your dad scares me. Like, I had that dad.
Yeah.
I had the scary dad. And growing up, I'm like, I'm going to be the cool dad. Well, now, I never came close to being the cool dad. Now I wish I was the scary dad. Because I tell my kids to do something, they look at me like, okay, well, what are you going to do about it?
Answer me this. Have you had this happen yet? Where, I don't know, something happens, whether it's, hey, can I have a Band-Aid? And your dad's there, and he just looks at you, and you're like, you are failing at what you're doing right now.
How are you
doing it right?
And he looks at you like, really? That's what you're going to do?
You know what? I'm not mad at you, son.
I'm just disappointed.
I am disappointed.
That's how you're going to respond to my grandson?
That's how you're going to do it, huh? Yeah. This is where we're at, huh?
No, they actually, because they will actually avoid me and then go to my dad, their grandpa, because now he's a softie. Now he's like the softest of the soft, which is fine. You get to be a grandpa. You have that luxury. And so they know, okay, well, I'm not going to go to dad because he'll try to act tough in front of his dad. No, I'm going to just go right to grandpa and grandpa will take care of it. Like, I tease my dad all the time. Like, if 1992 Richard saw 2022
Richard.
When
I was a kid?
He'd want to kick his butt.
So true.
Yeah. All right, 247. We'll wrap this thing up next. 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
This is DJ and PK.
How excited are we for Tuesday's release of the Big 12 football schedule?
I think for BYU, especially the first time around, it's another signal that this is real. And I don't think the independence era was a decade plus of wasteland, but it wasn't ideal. The idea of playing for the highest level, you've got that now. Your opportunity on paper is just as good as Utah's.
Now, can you get her done?
Yeah, you got to go accomplish
it. You
got to
go win it. If you do win, there's nothing stopping. If you're undefeated in this league, no one's going to say, yeah, but.
The idea but that's is the as thing you build is, your program down the line and win the conference, then get in. That's what matters the most. And now you've got a shot. You can sell that. Utah can't sell anything that BYU can't sell. Whatever they got, we got.
Catch DJ and PK, mornings from 6 to 10. Presented by Murdoch Chevrolet. Proudly serving Utah since 1926. On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Solson and Scotty Cheer.
That's right.
Yeah. On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Standing here beside you, want so much to give you this love in my heart that I'm feeling for you.
Hey, the week's half over, folks. That means we're getting closer to Hans coming back. I had a good show today. Could have used an extra guest or two, but other than that, I thought we did all right, Lloyd.
You speak for yourself. I had a great show. I had a phenomenal show.
Who we got tomorrow? Who's Thursday?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
Oh, we got our boy Tim.
I knew we had our usual Thursday.
We got our Tim.
You need to call my guy from Denver.
Yeah, no, I already know.
Come on. Hans isn't here.
It just doesn't sound all that.
People want to know. It's the biggest story in the NFL right now.
To go to the other side of this, I've been seeing some stuff on, you know, just from some of the beat writers with the Raiders and stuff like that. And like, it's obvious that the bridge with Carr and the Raiders is burnt, but it's like almost like it seems like the Raiders had all their eggs in this Tom Brady basket.
That seems rather silly.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, it seems like it's okay. We got to figure out what plan A, B, C, D. Oh, and E. Like, I'm just like, what?
It's going to be Tom. Tom's coming.
No, Tom's not coming.
Tom's not coming.
Tom's not the answer.
By the way, the end of the Janine Garofalo era, it's over in San Francisco. As their front office announced that, yes, they will not bring him back. He'll be a free agent. And so he can go sign.
Hey, he's a winner.
You know what? I think he's your next head coach. Or not head coach. I think he's your next quarterback of the Jets.
The Jets or the Raiders? The Jets? You saying Jets?
Oh, I could see the Raiders, yeah.
No, I'm just curious.
Would you take him?
Oh, man, that's...
Yeah, I'm with you.
He's right there with Derek Carr.
Yeah,
like he's just on the edge. It's not a Super Bowl quarterback. But though he wins, he's a winner.
I don't see
Aaron. But I just don't know.
Every year over the last 4 years, it's like, oh, Aaron Rodgers is leaving. Now this year's a little different because his contract is just abysmal. He's going to have to restructure that if he stays with Green Bay,
right?
Because Green Bay's not going to bring him back with that number. So,
by the way, kind of weird that. Because somebody joked about, I think I retweeted it, joked about how, I mean, this is the same exact day that Tom Brady did this video last year. Like, to the day, it's the same day. So somebody joked, oh, you know, put a little note in the, for March 13th, because I think that's when he said that.
He's done.
He's done, right?
He's done.
He is done.
He's done. All right. Hey, look, you'll be done if you don't take care of your loved one on Valentine's Day. Jimmy's Flowers is going to help you out. Valentine's Day fast approaching, so don't screw it up. Take care of the special person in your life. Stop by the stores in Layton, Ogden, or Bountiful, or order now from the Valentine's collection at jimmysflowers.com. All right. Back at it tomorrow. Thanks for making us part of your day. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Unrivaled next.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.